everyone. Welcome to Holy Crap, the Vlogcast. Vlogcast that comes from a skeptical point of view to answer some of the questions of why. This vlogcast started as a combination of spite and the Streisand effect when some people on Facebook that I knew from high school complained because I was doing with Facebook what I wanted to, which was post things, which included corrections to things that other people were posting because they wanted to, even though it was wrong. Part of this is also to follow through with the whole idea that sometimes the journey is more important than the destination. I am your host. I am Shujin Tribble. I am known all over the place under that name. Yes, that is a nickname. Leave me alone. I was born to a Roman Catholic family in Brooklyn, New York, raised on Long Island. I currently reside outside of Buffalo, New York, and I'm an unabashed atheist. On the round table tonight, we have a little bit of a lineup change, at least temporarily. We'll see how things work out. Starting off towards the left coast in Canada, Dallin.
Good evening, folks. Online, I'm known as Dallin. Born and raised in Canada, specifically in northern Manitoba, born to a Lutheran family. Religion wasn't a very large part of my life in terms of importance. I was always encouraged to keep an open mind, never stop learning, and especially never stop asking questions. I was, up until recently, a very live-and-let-live individual. People were free to believe what they wanted as long as they didn't try to push it on me. Then I saw people starting to push their beliefs on other folks, and I decided it was time to take a side. And I chose the side of rationality, reason, skepticism, and atheism.
Moving to the south of me right now in the white, wintry stuff, Joey.
Yeah. Good evening, folks. Name's Joe. I was born to a Roman Catholic family in Chicago, Illinois. Moved to Southern Ohio, spent 8 years in the military, and I am now living in Pittsburgh as a designer and a unabashed atheist, so, and a bit of an asshole. Sorry.
Nothing new there. Moving to the southeast, Unrenowned Tech.
Hi, folks. Unrenowned Tech here. I have a cold accompanying me today, so you won't be seeing much of my face since nobody really needs to see me constantly blowing my nose and stuff. I reside in Maryland. I am an atheist. I also have my moments where sometimes I'm an anti-theist, depending on what the topics are and what's going on in the world. I grew up in a mixed religious background, so I have some different religions to fall back on in terms of experience. They're all Judeo-Christian. But I also, you know, between different studies that I had in school and personal interests, I've read up on the basics of other various religions out there and saw various similarities and gaps and things like that. And over many decades, I came to the conclusion that it's just all a bunch of malarkey, you know, and that there's so much more out there that's more interesting. The reality of the world around us is so much more interesting than things that are made up.
Continuing off to the east into England. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Shujin. I'm Chris from currently living in the north of England. Been an atheist for most of my life, although I was originally sort of raised nominally Catholic, it never really took hold. And over the last few years, I've been getting interested in these skepticism and atheist movements.
All right, and moving down to the south across the channel into Paris. Good morning, Joseph. Assuming that you are there, Joseph.
Ground control to Joseph.
Well, it is first thing in the morning, and he did get in just after we started, so we'll probably pick him up.
It would have been more get his name to Tom.
We'll see how it plays out.
Yeah, he's probably trying to get his morning coffee, you know.
Can't imagine why. All right, so I will get Joseph in momentarily, but for the time being, however, of course, oh, good Lord, maybe this wasn't such a good idea. I got a gift from a friend of mine, a little stand for
phones and such. It's a little sticky thing, and maybe that's not such a good idea for me to use for the time being.
Hey, on Newegg, they used to have one that unfolded, and it looked like a batarang, and you could stick it in your wallet, and you take it out, and it had a hinge, and it went into like one of those little plate holders for your cell phone when you bend it in half.
I need a phone stand.
Well, in this case, I'll just use the built-in one on this. But anyway, getting things started over here, of course, with 5 minutes on the clock. Well, yes, I got my update for Lollipop. You can hear me gloat about it later. No, not really. So with apologies to Heath and Noah. First off, the first thing that I want to say for everybody is, of course, Happy New Year. Yes, it is Chinese New Year. What has this got to do with anything? Well, actually, not really a heck of a lot of anything, except for the fact that this is paper. Normally, I would be ranting and raving about stuff and being a big old annoyance for people, but no, not so much right now. I mean, it's Chinese New Year is a cool thing. I mean, people occasionally get together and, you know, have dinner and celebrate in their own way, which I did with my friends tonight, which, you know, Saturday nights is what we do. We get together for, you know, just get together. We could watch a movie. We could watch Mythbusters. We could play some tabletop games, which if you haven't played tabletop games in a long time, there are a lot of really cool ones out there. I would make a recommendation of Zombie Dice, but I don't want to be, you know, thinking that I've got some kind of ulterior motive, but Zombie Dice is a lot of fun for what it's worth. But another time we'll talk about games. One of the things that that came up was that one of my buds over there has been got himself hooked on doing like little origami things and putting them up secretly around the office. So things like butterflies, which was actually pretty. I did these with his direction, showing me. I'm not really that good at it, but you know, it was kind of cool. What does Japanese folding of paper have to do with Chinese New Year? Well, nothing really. But it kind of gave me a thought of what to talk about tonight, which is actually really good, because up until about a half an hour before air, I really didn't know what I was going to talk about. I had a bunch of things run through my head, but I got to thinking about this, and this inspired me. And before we came on, I had to tell the guys that I needed to step away for a couple of moments to get a prop of sorts, which is this, as a matter of fact. And no, you're not looking at it incorrectly. This is actually a Japanese book, believe it or not, all about origami. Yes, it folds differently from what you would expect, because, well, it's the way that they do in Japan. You hold it this way and you open it opposite of what you would normally do. Sadly enough, I have no idea what those papers were, but I'm sure I'll figure it out. Anyway, so what has this got to do with anything? Because, you know, you guys get used to me, you know, complaining and bitching and barking about stuff. We hear a lot of people who will go ahead and say, I'll be praying for you. And, you know, it gets old. You know, those of us that don't believe in that kind of thing, it gets old. And at the same time, you know, we don't want to poo-poo it all and say, you know, don't say stuff like that. We don't want to be annoying. And we generally speaking, we non-believers, we understand what you mean by it, even if we don't share it. I mean, it's the same as somebody saying, you know, Happy Easter. Well, I don't think nailing somebody to a couple of hunks of wood is such a great idea, but okay, you want to wish me well on a day that you celebrate incorrectly. All right, whatever. You know, that's fine. I get that. You know, happy spring. Okay, I get that. So what's this got to do? There is a Japanese custom. When someone is hurting, maybe in a hospital, that you break out your skills and you make cranes, paper cranes. And the tradition is that you make 1,000. And not just any paper cranes. And it doesn't matter what color paper you're using. What matters is that you make 1,000 from the heart, the most perfect that you could possibly put. And you string them together. My family, by marriage in Japan, sent some of these to my wife. You want to go ahead and tell somebody that you're thinking of them, that you want to do something special for them? You want someone to know that you're there in spirit and you're wishing them well? Go to a bookstore. Go to a craft store. Spend some time showing that you're thinking of them. Because I guarantee you, no matter what religion or irreligion, you will make them smile. And you'll give them hope. Because really, isn't that what you really wanted anyway? This is episode 54. And the title that I've got on this, At This Age, Who Can Tell, is actually from an old joke. The joke was, how many kids do you have? Well, I've got a boy, and I've got a girl, and I've got a newborn. Is it a boy or a girl at this age? Who can tell? Because Unknown Tech kind of threw us a little bit of a curveball, and it was actually really good for talking through a piece, and that's where we're going to be. Now, because we are dealing with medical stuff and we're talking about LGBT and newborns, there's a very good possibility that we're going to end up hitting some emotional landmines on some folks inadvertently. I please kindly inform you, we're not going to be looking to piss anybody off. We're not going to be looking to hurt anybody's feelings. We're going to be talking through the stuff with our perspectives to the best of our ability, as always. And if there's something that you want to add to the conversation or to ask of us, please, by all means, take advantage of the question and answer system here on the Google Hangout if you're watching live. Jeremiah, thank you for chiming in over there. Unfortunately, because this is not one of our not safe for work shows, I can't answer that one other than to say the next time I'm on air with you, I will make sure that I answer it directly. So thank you. Jeremiah's a good guy. If you would like to contact the show, by the way, I have been printing off for myself information, believe it or not, because it's starting to become a thing. If you'd like to send us email, you can send it over to podcast@holycrapthevlogcast.com. The voicemail, of course, is 859-HCTV-554. And on Twitter, YouTube, Google+, and Facebook, it is /HolyCrapTheVlogcast. Well, actually, on Twitter, it's @HolyCrapTV. So feel free to go ahead and do that. Some of us have got our own individual Twitters, and I can't use the word I was about to because the same reason. Damn it. I got to watch what I say. And, of course, we'll see how this all plays out for the evening. As you notice, Heretic Woman is not with us at the moment. She is currently trundling back from a concert that she went to. So, hon, if you happen to be watching by some stupid realm of the imagination, drive safe in the snow and the crap that you're going through, and on top of it all, stop playing the show while you're driving. God damn it. You got better things to do. So, Tech, do you want to give everybody the real quick rundown on how this played out?
Okay, basically what happened was is I saw an article on Pathos that there were two women. One was pregnant, had a child, and had the child at home, is my understanding. midwife recommended that they take the child to a specific doctor, Dr. Roy, if I'm saying it right, R-O-I. And so they made the appointment, and they got accepted for the appointment. And when they showed up, another doctor greeted them and said, listen, you know, the other doctor won't be, I will be treating you because the other doctor went home. Dr. Roy went home and prayed as to what to do. Because you see, the problem Dr. Roy had was is that the parent of the parents of the two child were women. So just for a short version, they're lesbian. And after much prayer, decided that she could not, Dr. Roy's a woman, she could not in good conscience treat their child because their lifestyle disagreed with her religion. And so the other doctor was going to have to treat the child. It's basically a case of religious bias saying, I'm not going to treat that child because I disagree with the parent's lifestyle. And that really bothered the hell out of me. And I put it on my Facebook page. And for anybody who is my friend who might be watching this knows that I keep my Facebook page pretty much locked down to a limited select amount of people. And one of them, I will go by, I'll give him the nickname of Rooster. It's an internal joke between the two of us. He has a tendency to play devil's advocate. He's actually a really good person, but he likes to play devil's advocate because he likes to see the results of it. And he did a very, very good job at playing devil's advocate. There was a lot of feedback from other people on my Facebook site, and there were a lot of people attacking him and his opinions and the end results and everything else. And overall, I think both sides of the argument had a lot of good points. But what also ended up was we don't know a whole lot about the situation based on the article. So I know that other people who are co-hosting today have done a lot more research into the doctor's background as much as they could find publicly available and other articles about what's going on, state laws. Like I know this happened, if I remember correctly, it was in Missouri, and Missouri has specific laws as well. And they also, for example, their anti-discriminatory laws do not cover discrimination based on sexism or sexual preference. So legally, there was no sexual discrimination because they don't have a law about it. So that's what we're here to discuss tonight is, you know, when should religious excuses be allowed to refuse treatment? And, you know, private practices versus public, things like that. So you'll see a lot of similarities between what happens in public schools versus private schools in this conversation with doctors as well.
Okay. Now, as a point of clarification, by the way, this specifically happened in Detroit, Michigan. Just to make sure we got that. And don't worry, man, you got the vast majority of it all right. Geography is not necessarily a strong suit. Don't sweat it. Dallin had been hunting. Both Dallin and Chris had been hunting out quite a bit. But before we get there, Joseph, do we have you back yet? Take that as a no. Okay.
Hey, Frenchie.
Well, if we hear snoring, we know what happened.
Fair enough. Okay. Don't be that guy. All right. So, Chris and Dallin, I'm going to be getting you guys first off. Which one of you guys wants to... you know what? Dallin, let me hit you first. Chris, I'll have you follow it up with the other stuff that you've got also, because... You guys were coming up with a lot of information really fast, and thank you on that.
I mean, it's a great thing that, you know, we have the internet where we can actually look for this stuff. But
oh my God, isn't it amazing?
Yeah. So my knee-jerk reaction when I hear anything to do with any kind of shenanigans involving the medical community, especially stuff like this, my first thought is, okay, what about the Hippocratic Oath? Now, this is sort of the original oath that is sworn by physicians as they are entering the practice. Basically, you get your you get, I'm not sure if it, you get your doctorate or your PhD, whatever it is that you get your MD, I guess. You can tell I'm an IT guy. I'm not a doctor, okay? When you are designated an MD, on that day, I believe you are expected to take this oath. And anybody out there in the medical community who want to correct me on this, please do, because, you know, I don't want to feel like I'm talking out of my hindquarters here. But the Hippocratic Oath, well, do we have time that I can actually read this verbatim, or should I just try to summarize it?
Well, I don't know how long it actually is, but if you've got a real quick pertinent overall, hey, that'd be great.
Okay.
Yeah, especially considering it's been revised several times. Why don't you give us
the
rounded, generalized version of it?
Okay. The basic thing here is do no harm, keep patient-doctor confidentiality, ease pain, do not go beyond your means. There's a line here that says, I will not cut for the stone, but will commit that affair entirely to the surgeons. Which means if you're not a surgeon, you're not going to do surgical stuff. You know, in a nutshell, it's basically you will not perform outside the scope of your training because that could invoke harm. And in many of the different oaths that I looked at as a result of this, one theme comes up. It doesn't matter who you are, where you're from, what color your skin is, what language you speak, who or what you sleep with at night. I, as a physician, am committed to servicing you.
Yeah, and if you look at Doctors Without Borders, they're a prime example of that oath. They go overseas to where people are getting injured and hurt. They don't care if that's the terrorist person who got hurt or an innocent bystander. They go over and they heal the wounded and sick and suffering.
Yeah.
And to go along with that, I forget exactly when it was, but there is a fairly prominent photograph from, I believe it's the early 60s, where a Ku Klux Klan member, still in his regalia, who had been injured, shot, I forget exactly what it was in an operating room surrounded by all the physicians and nurses and doctors and everything who were all, I'm going to use the term from the time, Negroes. Now, I know a lot of people are going to really bristle at that, and I'm sorry, but there's a reason I'm specifically using it, because at the time, you know full well, racial tensions here in the United States were abysmal. That's what the guy would have been surrounded by. But yet, their training, their oath, basically said, he's a patient. He's hurt. He needs my care. I'm going to do the job. So maybe I will see about finding that one for a little bit later. So, Chris, you ended up finding a little bit more information about this also. What info did you come up with real quick?
The Hippocratic Oath, which Dallin was referring to, was the classical one. It's now been replaced by the Declaration of Geneva, which was brought in about 1948. And this is putting it into more modern terms. So it starts off with first point, I solemnly pledge to consecrate my life to the service of humanity. And it says there, humanity, not any particular demographic or part of humanity. I'll practice my profession with conscience and dignity. The health of my patient will be my first consideration. And I will not permit considerations of age, disease, disability, creed, ethnic origin, gender, nationality, and sexual orientation, and several other things, to stand between me and the performance of my duty. I've also checked out the British Medical Association and the American Medical Association's Code of Ethics, and they both have very strong statements in there about not discriminating against patients based on sort of religion, racial origin, sexual identity, whatever. On there, and so I think it's completely out of order that a pediatrician would refuse to see see a patient based on their family's sexual orientation.
Yeah, and two items. One, what I had mentioned off before we got on the air was how weird this was, because there is a push now for physicians to turn away families that refuse to vaccinate their children. The whole anti-vax thing, which is a big deal, especially considering that measles is now a thing again. Yay. But you guys all know about that. Yeah. Anyway, but the... Yeah,
I would...
One second. But I did find the picture of this that I was referring to. I don't remember what the year was. I believe it was approximately 1963. And the individual on the gurney in the center had been hit with a shotgun, as I recall. And again, I may be misremembering it. I do remember that I covered this on one of my old... newscast shows way back when.
I would like to bring something up, a point here about the physician, a lot of the physicians putting away people who don't vaccinate their child. A lot of people go, well, what's the difference between somebody, you know, a physician saying, no, I'm not going to treat your child because they haven't been vaccinated versus I'm not going to treat your child because I disagree with your lifestyle. Well, there is actually a big difference. The difference being, and many doctors have pointed this out, is that the reason why so many of them are pushing away families that have refused vaccinations, not because they don't want to treat the child, it's because they don't want the potential harm that could spread amongst their practices and hospitals to become a threat. If your child has contracted measles, which is one of the most contagious airborne diseases that we know of, okay? I mean, it is seriously extremely contagious. And you bring them into an isolated area with lots of other people who already have compromised immune systems, you have the potential to do lots of harm. So by keeping that one family away from those groups of people, you protect them. You uphold the do no harm in the terms of doing the least amount of harm possible. Now, in cases, and we've seen this, and it's been documented, cases where parents have brought their kids in who are unvaccinated for purposes of vaccinating them and getting them healthy and well, the doctors have welcomed them with open arms. They've just taken stricter precautions to get them to be vaccinated and get them into their past the waiting room area and into the facilities and more stringent sterilization techniques. So it's not a case of that they're refusing to treat the child. It's a case of if the parents are refusing to vaccinate the child and they're bringing them in sick and the doctors allow it, they're allowing a lot of potential harm to affect all these other patients. And measles can kill. And it's not like it's a case of the common cold. This thing can kill people.
And unfortunately, we've seen that all too often. Because just all too often is a very broad term, I understand, but in this day and age, one is all too often, considering that at this point, the all too often for smallpox would be any. Let's see if we've got you at this point. Joseph, good morning, and let's see if your microphone is actually working. Would you like to say hello to everybody?
Hello, I think it's working.
Yes, you are.
Okay, cool.
So,
don't let me interrupt.
Well, you deserve your intro and everything, so at least get that much.
Okay. Canadian living in Paris, France, former Anglican, atheist since around 25, my mid-20s. And now I'm doing my best to promote critical thinking.
Which works out good. Okay, so Joey, I'm gonna come on over for you at this point because I mean we've had experience for you where you've had to deal with lots of inoculations and injections of so many different things. We're not gonna rehash all of those. If you guys want to find out a little bit more about some of those, you can go to damn near any of the previous episodes, we've hit it at some point or other. Or at least just go to all the rest of them and bring up our numbers for watches. So that would be wonderful. For your experience, you've been to bases of all kinds, especially with training and such, where you've got, I would assume that you've been in situations where you've seen folks that were married, living together, so to speak, with people who are in the service at that point, yay?
Yes.
Okay. Any with young ones also at that point?
Oh, yes, most definitely.
Okay. And I assume because of being effectively part of the military at that point, even if you're not, you know, as a spouse and whatnot,
yes,
you get to take advantage of some of the medical services, no?
Yes. If you are a direct dependent, you do have, if there's not necessarily a TMC, which is Troop Medical Center, not necessarily a hospital, more of a minor,
a clinic,
an urgent care kind of thing. You know what I mean? Not necessarily emergency rooms and such like that. But if there's a hospital on post and you are stationed on that post and you have your dependents there, you do have the option of bringing your dependents to that hospital. To kind of compound on what Dallin had been saying earlier, had been quoting on the Hippocratic Oath earlier, you want to see just how far this goes. And yeah, now it's it's governed by the Geneva Convention. You want to see just how far this goes. I can name several situations where we had been deployed in combat, were attacked, neutralized the enemy, still alive, still potentially capable of fighting, but not. Unlike Hollywood would have you believe, we don't walk over and put a bullet in their head. Once the fight's over, it's over. And at that point, it is, if you have a medic with you, even if you don't have a medic with you, because you know basic first aid, you are in yourself considered a medic. It is your duty to apply medical assistance to that individual, regardless of the fact that he was just trying to kill you. Because when the fight is over, the fight is over.
When all is said and done, we're all human, and we all deserve at least the opportunity, once all the political crap is all over and done with, effectively, you know?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, we've heard in history, World War II in particular, if I remember correctly, was it not where POWs were effectively just shot and just left on the side of the road?
In many cases, yes.
And I'm not naming which groups had done it, because
every group had units that were guilty of such in one way or another.
Exactly, which was the reason why I wasn't going to go naming names, because unfortunately we know full well the U.S., for all its grandioseness, is not without blood on its own damned hands. And I'm not going to be one to shrug away from that because, well, just because we're supposed to be this grand bastion doesn't mean that we don't have our stupid, as we've seen on too many occasions.
And besides, hiding the truth does more harm than good, most cases.
Well, exactly. Let's see what happens in Oklahoma.
And funny enough, that is a discussion that we're going to be having very soon. That is one that I want to have, because we'll say that for later, because there's a whole bunny rabbit with that one. Yeah. And
all I'll say, Shujin, give me until the end of next week. So I can give you a chance. Like, for those of you who know, part of my job is traveling. Next Tuesday, I will be flying down to Oklahoma City, basically the buckle of the Bible Belt, as it's called. I'll be there for 4 days. Now, doesn't necessarily mean I'm going to be interacting a lot with, you know, the common folk. I'll be there, obviously, to do a job. But if I pick up on any particular vibes or anything surrounding this whole thing, I'll be back by Saturday, so I'll be able to let you all know what I found out.
Fair enough. You know, with the way that everything's been going weather-wise, maybe I'll see about pushing it back a week also, give you enough time just in case.
Well, let's see what happens. I mean, I've been checking the weather down there. It's been quite nice, even by Canadian standards. This guy's been giving me the stink eye all week. We've been comparing temperatures almost like a phallic waving contest.
Wow, that's the most politically correct way of saying that I have ever heard. Bravo, sir.
I'm trying not to invoke the power of 10 just yet, but yeah, the thing is that the temperature's been on my side quite a bit here. A lot warmer. Like, I feel for you guys out east, but I'm kind of enjoying this sort of break in the Arctic thing right now.
Yeah, which, for what it's worth, by the way, for those of you that actually do real numbers in temperature, right now Yellowknife is minus 21 Celsius, and I'm at minus 7, which is bizarre, because just on the other side of the border into Kitchener, Ontario, it's minus 20.
Yeah, I'm actually down to minus 12 here right now, which is the coldest it's been in a long time.
No.
You must be right on the cusp of the cold Celsius, because for the first time in the last month, it is actually broken back above 0 Celsius here. It is actually right now should be still hovering just about there.
Wonderful. All right. We'll compare notes on temperature a little bit later. We got
there is one other thing I'd like to bring up about this whole article business is that we have a slight dilemma with this conversation, and that is we're talking about a private practice in Michigan. We're not talking about a local hospital that's completely open to the public that you walk in, boom, yada yada yada. We're talking about a practice where you have to make an appointment and get accepted. So things are a little bit different in that respect when it comes to private business.
Legally, they may be different, but if you're a damn physician, you're a damn physician. And if you're going into that, then you should be abiding by the ethical codes.
I agree with you on that. I personally agree with that opinion. Okay, I'm bringing it up because it was part of the debate that was happening on my timeline.
Mm, okay? Right.
It was brought up multiple times that when does a private practice, regardless of what the business type is, when are they forced to put their belief system aside and provide services? And now when anti-discriminatory laws come into play, one of the analogies I used was a cookie shop. You know, if somebody comes into my shop to buy a cookie and I say, I'm sorry, I'm not going to sell you a cookie because you're black or you're Jewish or Muslim or you're Christian, I'm breaking the law. But here we're talking about a law that doesn't exist, and now we have a homosexual couple come in and I say, I'm sorry, I don't agree with your lifestyle, I can't sell you a cookie. Well, technically, I'm not breaking the law. That's the technical side of it. Now, ethically and morally, you know, I'm being an asshole, I'm being a jerk.
Sir, it's already done. Okay, and good points, and we are going to get to them. I promise, we are going to get to them. We did get a question from Chris, by the way, thank you, over in the Q&A system, saying, so, did this quote-unquote doctor, Chris's quote-unquotes on that one, doctor, object to the child's sexual orientation? Because if she objected to the parent's lifestyle, isn't that a complete non sequitur? It's like trying to smell the color blue, which spelled wonderfully. Joseph, I thought that you'd see that spelling and have a good smile at that one. But
c'est bon.
So the big question is, where was the objection? Well, the objection was with the parents. Who they are, and that's where the problem comes up, because as Tech was just saying, what does it have to do with the LGBT protections and such? According to the Al Jazeera report, which was the one that I went with only because I was looking for something a little different, a little off. I didn't want to go with HuffPo. I didn't want to go with any of the others. Al Jazeera just happened to be one that had covered it, and I thought, okay, for a change. Apparently, in the I had it right in front of me, and I've gone ahead and I've scrolled around from it, so I'm kind of losing it. In Michigan, if I remember the information correctly, yes, Michigan does not have LGBT protection laws in place to protect against, well, pretty much anything. So if somebody doesn't like you because you're hugging on your girlfriend or you're snogging with your boyfriend, which, okay, you know what, whatever, that's not illegal. And unfortunately here in the U.S., or with most laws, you have a lot of gray line of it's illegal, it's legal, and it's neither. So it's permissible, which is annoying as all get out. But that's the area where the court of public opinion is strongest. When you're in that legal area of it's not impermissible versus it's explicitly stated. So that gets to be really annoying. Joseph, I want to get you in on, because, well, first off, you know, you haven't had an opportunity really to talk very much for a second. What is the, how is the medical community worked in France? Is it socialized medicine? Is it privatized medicine? Is it a branch of the government that actually operates it? How does it operate for you guys over there? Or, and do you know anything on the pediatrics side also?
Well, the pediatric side, I can't help you, but the French system, it's a lot like the Canadian system. I think if I'm not, Dallin, if I'm not wrong, in Canada, it's by province, I think. But it's basically, it's socialized healthcare.
Yeah, we have by province, we have a compulsory baseline that everybody's expected to pay into. Typically, your job will take care of those monthly fees. Currently in Alberta, the government takes care of it because, you know, we were such an oil-rich province not too long ago. That has changed. They're actually thinking of reinstating the fee to come back to being the responsibility of the citizen as opposed to the government. Now, that baseline coverage, that gets you into clinics, that gets you in to see a doctor, gets you pretty much the basics. If I were to equivocate it, or if I was to equal it to something in the States, I would say, I want to say Medicaid, or, you know, the Obamacare or AHC, depending on how you want to, Affordable Health Care or ACA, whatever you want to call it. Like I said, it provides your base level. Now, in Canada, what you can do then is you can then opt to pay for something more. This is what we call Blue Cross or Sun Life or something like that. Again, typically your place of employment will get you that health care, and any fees, either they absorb it or they deduct it off your pay. When I first started at the job I'm currently at, we were provided a health care allowance, but the responsibility to get our own health coverage fell to us ourselves. So I had to go out and shop for my own coverage. And yes, while I had to pay for it, I would then hand my expenses into work, and they would reimburse me on the next paycheck. So I could sort of have a tailor-made thing for myself. So I could choose to have more coverage or less, or maybe because, you know, I've got high blood pressure, there were certain things I couldn't do, or that I had to, you know, there was more that I had to have. And that's pretty much how it works here. You always have that baseline to depend on to at least get you in there. But then after that, it's you subscribe to the plan that best fits you.
In France, it's the same base coverage, and you can subscribe to something called a mutuelle, which is a mutual fund, there's something like that anyways, but it's like an extra level of insurance that you can you can buy according to your needs.
Now, is that what gets you like into like semi-private rooms, certain procedures, prescriptions, that kind of stuff?
No, because it's only who pays it, because there's no preferential treatment. You choose your treatment. for example, you have a lot of people going to the American hospital here for certain procedures because they're better, and that's how they choose.
Oh, okay.
So now the question becomes, as was also clarified, and Chris, I got that, by the way, just so you know. I kind of got where you're going. But Chris was specifically saying that his point was that the parents weren't the patient, but the child was. So it's effectively discrimination by proxy, I guess is the best way to put it. And how crappy that really is. Chris, I'm coming back for you because you had a good piece about this, about how it was. Even if the legal aspect was completely set aside, the moral obligation, the ethical obligation of the doctor, is brought into question at this point. No.
Yeah, definitely. Because. As I say, I reviewed the sort of the ethical guidelines from American Medical Association, British Medical Association, as well as the several of the oaths, and they all contain parts about not discriminating against, you know, based on irrelevant factors. And I think it's a really horrible thing to do. Some people have made an argument that if the doctor's religious beliefs were going to impact the standard of care they would be able to offer to the patient, there may be some kind of conflict of interest type thing that could be done. But really, if you're going to become a doctor and you know what it entails, then you should be able to rise above that. And if you have known from the start that, you know, that you're not going to be able to, then basically don't be a doctor.
Back over for Dallin one more time. I know I'm kind of ping-ponging back and forth between the two of them, but they did a lot of really heavy, quick research before we went on the air, and they got a lot of stuff that was really pertinent for me. So please forgive me if I look like I'm favoriting them. I kind of am. But for good reason this time out. Now, Dallin, you had also pulled up some information about the doctor, Dr. Roy. It's spelled R-O-I, so I'm having a hard time because I'm thinking to myself, is Pastor Roy? No, it's Dr. Roy, and I'm yeah, and Cash, right. Thank you so much. Yeah.
That means actually, king in French.
Yeah, I was just going to say, it. If you really took it, it would be, at least up here, it would be wa or wa. Got it? Yeah, that's it.
Sure. Yeah, we'll go with that.
Like Patrick Waugh, the old, I think he was Montreal goalie or something like that.
You could always just call her Vesna.
Yeah. We could call her a lot of other things, too, but again, this isn't a Power of Ten show.
No, it's not. So what did you find out about said doctor directly and credentials and such?
Actually, Chris was the one that pulled up all of that, but suffice it to say, she's not an MD. From what was gathered, she's what's called a DO, which is a doctor of osteopathic medicine.
Okay.
Now, this already might smell a bit like woo, and you're not wrong.
Yep. Chris, hold on a second. Chris, can you give a quick and accurate and colorful, maybe a carefully colorful explanation of what osteopathy is?
Not at present. I've still been looking, but if you give me about 2 or 3 minutes, I should be able to give you a brief summary if you want to get someone else's input.
I think I can give you the Cole's notes here.
Sure, be my guest.
Okay. Again, it was, you know, to the Wikipedia. So I'm as credible as that particular site, so let's go with that.
I'll be an expert in a minute.
Yeah.
And thank you.
Okay, so with DO, or Doctor of Osteopathic Medicine, it is offered by medical schools in the United States. They are people who attain that can become licensed as what is known as osteopathic physicians and have the equivalent rights, privileges, and responsibilities as physicians with a Doctor of Medicine degree, or MD.
Hold on a second. Before you go past that, you specifically said that it was offered in the U.S.
Yes.
Is there a listing that says that it is only and exclusively to?
There's no clause that I can see about that, just that it says that it's offered in the States.
Okay.
Now, I won't get into too much details, but again, what I said, these people, graduates with a DO, can work side by side and have the rights, privileges, and responsibilities the same as MD physicians. Now, what makes them different is that on top of the training that they've been given, which is, again, equivalent, they have to go through clinical training, they have, like, core clinical training, and the curricula at these osteopathic medical schools is very similar to the schools that provide MD certification. The key difference here is that DOs also have an extra 300 to 500 hours of training on a philosophically based technique for what's called hands-on manipulation of the human musculoskeletal system. And I said that slowly because I was trying like hell to articulate it properly. It's also known as osteopathic manipulative medicine, or OMM. And any skeptic or critical thinker who's listening to this, your woo gauge probably just went right off the freaking scale.
You know, if he wasn't already dead, I'm pretty sure that...
Danger, Will Robinson, danger!
Yeah, exactly. Robbie the Robot's in full form here. So basically what you've got is you've got Doctor plus Woo.
Which sounds like a lucrative business right there. Okay, Chris, how much more have you got at this point, then?
Okay, thanks. Yeah, I've got some more on the osteopathic manipulative medicine. It was an ideology created by someone called Andrew Taylor, still in... he was around from 1828 to 1917, so about 150 years ago. It is, as far as I can gather... quickly, not dissimilar to chiropractic, except where chiropractic deals with the spine and bones, osteopathic medicine assumes the existence of a myofascial continuity, which is meant to be some sort of tissue or sinewy type layer that connects all parts of the body, and by manipulating this, as sort of chiropractors do with spinal subluxations, you can cure all kinds of illnesses, not necessarily limited to musculoskeletal problems. And it's all the same imbalance in this this membrane, which I don't believe exists, if I'm reading this rightly. So it is, medical doctor plus a hell of a lot of woo.
It almost sounds like somebody mixed a medical doctor with a masseuse and a chiropractor and said, yeah, I can cure everything.
Now, can I add a tablespoon of irony to this whole thing?
Sure.
Okay. People who get this certification, who become DOs, are expected to take their own oath, the osteopathic oath. Now, I don't have the quote verbatim of what the oath says, but the oath upholds the concepts of, now this is the cool part, confidentiality, which is normal, non-maleficence, so in other words, they can't treat you with the intent of causing further harm.
The do no harm clause.
Yeah, but the third one. Okay, just sorry, I'm still choking on the irony here, okay? The oath also upholds the concept of evidence-based medicine. Now stick that one in your hookah and smoke it.
Now see, that's, so
you have
that's
an
the
ideology,
thing.
But it's supposed to be based on evidence.
Exactly, and that's the thing that hurts the most, because if you're using the scientific method properly, the conclusions come, and the explanations come. And what we're dealing with has got absolutely nothing to do with that. Case in point, and Beth, by the way, thank you. Sorry for the delay in getting to that. Beth is exactly right, making reference to this. It's not exactly the same thing, but it's along the same lines. There was a news story a while ago now at this point. Fortunately, it's basically been relegated to the, what, really? Somebody did that? Where a pharmacist had a religious objection to women getting the pill or the day after pill or birth control in general and didn't want to sell the stuff. And it basically came down to, why are you doing that job then? Because that's part of your job, which was just damn stupid. I mean, there are so many times when I get sick and tired. Okay, small bunny hole. Where that objection comes up. I don't want you to kill a new life. I don't want you to be a murderer of a new life. Well, God damn it. Why the hell do you have stuff for curing a cold or for helping people get through a flu or antibacterials or acetaminophen so that you can take being uncomfortable and having a temperature that's going to kill stuff that got into your body that otherwise shouldn't have been? That's new life that's being formed, and you're intentionally killing it. And you don't have an objection with that religiously, because why exactly doesn't this all jibe for me? I wonder why. So we got somebody who has otherwise taken an oath effectively known as do no harm. I mean, that colloquially, that's what we expect to hear. We've got someone that was medically trained, supposedly, from who did anybody find out? Wait a second, one of you guys found out who where it was that they got their DO from? Where was that?
I did have the page up. Here we go. Yeah, Eastlake Pediatrics was the practice. Michigan State College of Osteopathic Medicine.
Okay, so a college, and I'm going to use the term loosely for the moment. I'm not going to put scare quotes around it because I don't know. I haven't investigated
I didn't check the I didn't check out the the college at all.
Yeah. So for the moment, we'll assume that it is an accredited college with good standing. We'll just assume that for the moment. That means that we're now dealing with somebody who should otherwise know better from baseline training, but was then given a much looser lead to be able to say in a written statement, quote, please know that I believe that God gives us free choice, and I would never judge anyone based on what they do with that free choice. Again, I am very sorry for the hurt and angry feelings that were created by this. Written by the doctor who said, can't help you.
So wait a minute, hold on. Wait a minute. The doctor's saying, oh, I won't judge you, but I did judge you, and I'm sorry.
In a nutshell.
Yeah. Exactly.
Okay. By the way, with the doctor's background, when you said they got their OBDO, whatever they called it, did they focus specifically in pediatric medicine?
I obviously didn't give that much of a breakdown, so can't comment on that. But on the very quickly on the quote about Xu Jin's thing about the free choice, this could be taken as implying that she believes homosexuality is a choice. And I would expect a doctor or anyone who's been through medical training to know better.
Well, don't forget, this is an argument that's very old in terms of both MDs and psychologists and psychiatrists and public opinion, even especially public opinion. And you'll find many people who will admit, who will say that they've, you know, they were straight and then they turned gay. And you'll have other people say, well, I thought I was straight, but it turned out I was gay or bi or whatever. And I just realized it. And, you know, it because there's so much of that going around, you have the confusion, you have the public opinion, you have the rumors, which we all know what happens with rumors. They just, it's like a game of telephone. It just gets worse and worse and worse. And this, believe it or not, was actually part of the topic on my timeline was, you know, is homosexuality, is it considered to be a belief of homosexuality versus a scientific fact? You know, that was entered into it as well.
Yeah, that's something that we'll definitely have to hold on to that because that is there's a whole piece all unto itself, but we're going to get to that. Joey, I saw you. Go ahead.
Now, first, let me paraphrase myself or preface myself with, do I agree with what this particular doctor did? Absolutely not. However, before we completely demonize her, there is one thing I would like to make perfectly clear. She did not simply throw them out of the practice, and she did not simply out and out turn them away. She did, in fact, get one of her coworkers, one of her peers, to come to them, explain the situation, and provide care. Then they left and decided they would find a different practice to go to. So at least, this much can be said that she didn't necessarily go out of her way to harm anybody, and she did at least make sure that they did have somebody to give them care.
Which is all well and good. But
yes.
I worry about the precedent this could set in the future for other doctors who want to do the same thing, but are not as thorough in the follow-up. Like, you know, somebody that says, oh, you're gay? No, I'm not going to treat you, and bye-bye. Just leave them hanging like that.
There is that, because there is the big, big question mark about this whole thing of how much can we basically berate her if not for what was done, the reason for it, but other than if you take it just on its own, leaving the rationale behind it, to go ahead and talk with this new couple with a new baby, 6 day old at the time. By the way, this was last year, admittedly. 6 day old baby come in and then turn him away from the one doctor, minimally. That's a dick move. It really is. Tech, you had unmuted yourself. I'm assuming you had something else that you wanted to add over at that point.
Yeah, I also want to give props to the doctor, although I don't agree with her actions and her reasoning behind her actions. The fact that she was willing to admit it, to find another doctor to provide the treatment, so an alternate physician, that still does take somebody who does care about people being treated. Okay, so I wouldn't call the doctor maleficent, but I would say that they probably need to rethink some of their choices that they've made in their belief system, just overall based upon their career choices. One of the things that was brought up on my timeline was the concept of the doctor-patient bond. And once again, this was brought up by the Rooster, who admittedly is very good at playing devil's advocate. He's also a private business owner, so you know he's speaking from a certain perspective. And he personally admits that he would never want to see a doctor who based upon their personal beliefs or their background or whatever, felt that they could not form the proper kind of patient-doctor bond that is required, especially when it comes to a child. Because, like, for me, for example, when my son and his mother and I were all together, his pediatrician, it was the same doctor every single time. And when she was out and couldn't see him, we were very hesitant to have one of her alternates at her practice see my son. And it wasn't until we vetted those doctors that any of them were allowed to see my son. So there is a bond. He did bring up a very good point, something that parents do need to consider if they've never considered before, especially new parents. So any of you watching who are expected parents on the way, do vet your doctors, because you're going to want them to have an active place in your child's, at least their physical care. So in that respect, the end result of the doctor admitting, I can't form a bond with you because I've got psychological problems, that was probably best for the child, because that gave the parents a chance to go step back and go, whoa, you may have been recommended, but you're not right for our kid.
Yeah, that's something I wanted to hit. Yeah, as a matter of fact, Joseph, I was going to hit you in a second. Go ahead and say your thing, and I'll ask you my question.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that, you know, that bond, it's what I call the trust factor. Because, you know, even as an atheist, going to your doctor, it's probably one of the only acts of faith that an atheist makes, is you have to trust your doctor. I mean, he's doing stuff to you that you don't know about. And so you're going to have to take his word for it that what he's doing is good for you. So, yeah, that bond is important.
I can relate.
Yeah, there is that.
When they told me they were putting me under to for the gallbladder surgery, it quite literally was, okay, guys, my life is in your hands. If I wasn't so dehydrated, I'd be pissing myself right now.
Yeah. So, Joseph, what I wanted to ask was, now, you and Chris, both being in the European theater, and we can have that whole pissing match about Great Britain is not part of Europe another time. There's a running joke with that. We'll talk about that later.
About peeing.
Well, I wasn't going to go there. What I was going to go with was, since you haven't had as much time on this one, to the best of your recollection, for whether it be for France itself or for the mainland itself, for the news reports, can you remember hearing any story in the news where a physician turned away a patient at all?
Not to my recollection, no. I really can't.
Not to mine either.
Yeah, I wouldn't think so. But at the same time, I mean, admittedly, that would be something that would not really make the news unless somebody made a big stink about it. I mean, social media is wonderful about that kind of thing.
The social network's important here between doctors, and I think anybody who tried that will be drummed out of the trade by other doctors.
I've got a feeling it wouldn't go down so well over here either. And
reputation is everything.
Yeah, so. What Tech was saying is, I've never really had any sort of individual bond with any doctors per se. I mean, I was treated for epilepsy with a child, and that was by a specialist. And that was the only one I've ever seen regularly in my life. I just go on to, you know, to the doctor's office or surgery and see whoever's available. And I've got a reasonable level of confidence that they're going to be qualified and know what they're doing.
Yeah, and before I get Dallin into this, yeah, I did want to make sure that people understood before we completely gloss past it. Using the term faith colloquially in this particular case is completely accurate. I mean, there's a lot of stuff medically that we don't know. And we have to put a large level of trust in someone else's expertise in a field. And when you start to get into an area where you really don't know and you don't have the time to try and vet it all, and you have to basically say, you know what, you've been doing this a long time, you've got the documentation that says that you know your shit, and screw it, I'll get away with it.
But there's also a reasonable expectation that you're failing to hit upon. And that comes from the vetting of the science of medicine, the history, the scientific study reports, the news reports of things when they go wrong or when they go right, the new technologies that come out, like the 3D printing of a woman's jawbone because she was suffering from a disease that completely obliterated it, and the transplant went exceedingly well. Granted, that's it was kind of a one-time thing, but we have past reports to draw upon. So when somebody goes in to see a doctor because they have a flu, we typically understand that the only thing the doctor is going to be able to do is give you stuff to comfort you while your body fights off the flu, because that is the historical nature of, you know, fighting off the flu. But when you go in for a particular type of surgery, if it's a relatively new surgery, you're going in based on faith. If it's a long open heart surgery, when it first started, was kind of like that. Open heart surgery has been performed so often now that it's now a thing of, okay, it's open heart surgery, but this doctor's performed the surgery over 300 times. The medical science behind it is sound. It's been proven. You have reasonable expectations that your open heart surgery is going to go well.
Yes, and to go along with that, even though it's anecdotal, when my wife had to go in for a liver biopsy because the cancer had gotten into that point, they were going to be removing, as I recall, something akin to approximately a third or two-thirds of liver because it needed to come off. And the doctor that was going to be the surgeon that was going to be doing it said that nationally the incidence of mortality for this type of surgery was approximately, I'm trying to remember off the top of my head, I believe he said it was about 15%, whereas for him it was 3%, which of course we thought, you know, this is wonderful. That means we've got a 97% chance of success. And he reminded us in very sobering detail, please also remember, that's all well and good unless you're in that 3%. There is still a measure of, you know full well, if you don't make that saving throw, there's not much of anything you can really do about it, unfortunately. And that's kind of where the faith comes in, because there's always going to be that margin of error somewhere, that random piece that you just can't account for. No matter what you do, you can do the best of your ability. Every doctor can do to the best of their ability, but there's always going to be that chance in there somewhere that you can't account for, and you just do the best that you can. Dal, you look like you had something that you wanted to say before, and forgive me for interrupting you before you got to it.
Like I said before, like last summer I was in the hospital for surgery, and like you said, relatively routine procedure, gallbladder removal. I mean, it happens. Gallstones are quite commonplace. But this was my first time ever having to need surgery. The first time I was ever going to be given a general anesthetic that was going to knock me out. And I got to say, like, I don't know how many people here, Joey, I know you've gone under a few times in your career.
Inadvertently.
But I can't speak for the rest of the people here, but all I can relate from my experience is there is a staggering feeling when you're being wheeled into the surgical theater and you know that within the next 5 to 10 minutes they're going to put a mask over your face, which I didn't know that how that was going to work at the time. Your life, your continued existence on this planet is now in the hands of somebody else. For the first time in my entire life, I was 100% not in control of my life. There's a huge amount of uncertainty, and you know, I can get it. You know, where somebody who has, you know, a believer, I could see them praying for that because it's terrifying. Even though they said, like, routine procedure, they gave me all this documentation that I was reading, like, okay, what exactly are they doing to me? What are they going to be removing? What is its function? Am I going to be able to live a normal life without this particular piece of my body inside me? And they assured me, they said, the surgeon who was going to perform it, he said, hey, look, I'm not even going to cut you open. We're going to make 4 tiny incisions. We're going to stick a couple of cameras and a tube into you, and we're going to snip that thing, vacuum it out, and you'll be able, you know, you'll be up and about, you know, in a couple of hours. And, you know, thankfully, you know, I'm very grateful for the science that is laparoscopic surgery. Let me put it to you that way. Because the classical method, I probably would have spent 6 months recovering. I'd probably still be in a bit of a state.
Yeah, and I can attest to that.
I'd also like to point out the surgeries that we're talking about and the things that we're talking about, these are extremely life-altering events. These are potentially, you know, if something goes wrong, you could die and everything else. Whereas these ladies, they brought in their child for a checkup. Not a life-saving, well, in theory, if something was wrong with the child, it could be potentially life-saving. But basically, preventative care. And that was part of, you know, the reason that this whole show, today's topic came about was, when does a doctor have the right to say, I'm sorry, I'm not going to give you preventative care? If it's a life-saving problem that you have, you know, at that point, you walk into any hospital, they don't have the right to turn you away because your life is on the line. But there's preventative care on that same level. And that's where the gray area becomes.
Yeah, and that's where I was going to finally pull us over to, because that piece I wanted to make sure we understood full well how much trust we need to have in doctors and how much was broken in trust with this. You talk about having a cachet of respectability. That's just melted all the way at this point. So, yeah, at what point could a doctor say, I'm not going to take you on? Now, as I mentioned before, if you take away the religious implications of it all and the rationale for why they were turned away, they talked with the doctor, they felt that they had a rapport with the doctor, they set up an appointment with the doctor beforehand. They didn't just willy-nilly, oh, yellow page, kids, ask your parents what the yellow pages was. And they set everything up ahead of time to finally have the doctor at the last second effectively say, not going to do it. In what other situation, whether public or private, doesn't matter for a second, in what other situation would this be acceptable behavior? Because I can't think of anything where this would be. I mean, does anybody want to try to come up with anything even close?
I mean, there are situations where doctors and other professionals might refuse to perform a service or take on a patient for, you know, ethical and professional reasons. Maybe it's something outside of their specialty or experience, that kind of thing. On there, but if it's just due to personal bias, say the only other things I can think of routinely where professionals would refuse service would be if they have some level of personal connection to the person they're serving, and it would be some kind of conflict of interest from a business point of view.
Sure, that makes perfect sense. Dallin, I see you looking at going on that one.
No, Chris is right. I mean, if you have a personal relationship, with the patient outside of the clinic. So your friends, or perhaps you're involved romantically or on some other level, that I could see, I could understand a physician wanting to step away from that because, you know, it could be both parties are just uncomfortable with that and it could have repercussions down the road. But I mean, everything he's talked about, it has to do with conflict of interest, which is largely a legal matter as well as ethical. What this physician did, you know, despite the backup plan, despite diverting everything, I still, my fear is what precedent this is going to set for not just the medical profession, but other institutions. Like, one of the biggest things I thought of was, what happens if a fire station is called out to a fire and they find out that the house belongs to a gay couple? And because of their religious belief, collectively, for whatever reason, they decide, no, we're going to let the house burn because we can't, because they're gay.
Well, actually, believe it or not, precedent has already been set for that here in the United States, because there are areas of the U.S. that have laws that legally allow public officials, so police responders, ambulance drivers, politicians, firefighters, to actually discriminate against people who are identify as homosexual, gay, lesbian, transgender, all that fun stuff. All the LGBT plus community, that does exist. But you also have other ones where no precedent has been set, no laws have been set, so it becomes the legal gray area. And they watch for other lawsuits before setting their own, like that whole thing with Hobby Lobby, you know, that actually set a standard. And a lot of states followed up on that, and they used it as an example to start making other laws.
That might have been the precedent for this case.
There was law proposed on, or going through in Georgia, I'm not sure what stage it has, that basically is going to allow spousal abuse and domestic violence and whatever you want under the guise of deeply held religious beliefs. Bobby C and Miss Ashley on No Religion Required covered this in a lot more detail a couple of weeks back, but these kinds of religious exemptions to the law are really quite worrying, and it seems that, as with anything else, if you give them an inch, they'll take a mile.
Not that anybody should know what any of those particular lengths mean any longer, but hey, you know, it's the U.S. What the hell are you going to do?
Well, like Groucho Marx once said, I think it was Groucho Marx who said, give a guy an inch and he thinks he's a ruler. Give him 12 inches and he is a ruler.
Chris has also chimed back in again and wanted to say, and first off, apologizing for usurping the question section. No, that's what it's there for. Good. Thank you.
We like traffic.
Yes. Says, but that's actually considered ethical if she went to get someone else to treat the baby. That happens all the time. Still, the baby was the patient, so her reasons for not treating were still absurd. Yes. You know what? Screw it. I'll just call it the way that it is. Yes. I don't remember what the actual dictionary definition of absurd is, but yes. I'm going with that. Why? Because I don't want to say, quote, because it was a dick move, unquote, again, because I think I've said that more than enough for tonight. I don't think that I ever want to have to say that again.
Not tonight anyway, but
yeah. Yeah, no, full well. So sooner or later it's going to happen again. Joey.
Oh, go ahead.
Well, first of all, what Dallin had been going on over about the firefighters, I couldn't help but think about that story of the firefighter who's the fire chief who had his team wait while his house burnt down. And when asked why, he's like, "It's my ex-wife's house. Nobody was in it, but sorry, bit of fun." However, on the subject of building up some sort of appointment of some professional action, and then suddenly having it canceled at the last minute, I can't say I know how that feels. Me as the client do that, or have that done to me, but I know what it's like to have that done by my client to me. As a designer, I had a commission that I was working on for a local group here in Pittsburgh, and it was pretty much done. I'd already done all this work on designing a logo, on designing, layouts and all of that stuff. And at the last minute, called them up, and they're like, "Yeah, we cannot continue our business with you anymore." The reason being is because their group wasn't a religious-based. They treated it secular. They welcomed everybody, but it was a religious-founded after-school group. And quite literally, they looked at my professional email, which is what this account is attached to, found these videos, and decided, yeah, we can't do business with an atheist.
Which is real, real. And
I don't care.
That's okay.
But I know how that feels. If it was flipped around, It's flipped around.
Well, actually, on that note, one of the other aspects of the conversation on my timeline that came up, once again by the rooster, wonderful devil's advocate, was, by trying to force the doctor to provide preventative care for their child, you're forcing a doctor who their belief system said, no, I can't do that because it's against my religious beliefs. You're actually discriminating against that doctor's religious beliefs. Now, like I said, this is a devil advocate statement, but he's very good at it. He's good at seeing two sides of the same coin. And, where do we say, okay, it's all right for us to say that what you did was okay because that is part of your religious background setup versus, okay, we understand and we respect your religious background, but you're still not allowed to do that regardless of your religion or lack thereof.
Yeah, there's something to be said for that, and I'm gonna kind of hit that in a moment. But Jeremiah, and by the way, thank you for watching, man. Really appreciate it. Also on the Q&A, prayer. Back up a second. Because the doctor had prayed on it to try to get guidance, however, and then finally said, no can do. This is what this comes part of. Prayer because there's nothing the person can do, so they pray so that they can feel they have some say in something that they have no control over in reality. Well, yeah, and it kind of ends up being funny because haven't we seen time and time and time again that whenever people try to get religious guidance through their own prayers and meditations, that their God tends to agree with what they believe more than anything else. I believe Matt Dillahunty has made that reference on many an occasion on Atheist Experience of Austin, but I could be wrong about that when I'm pretty sure that it's come up on several occasions, which just becomes annoying because that means...
I think a strong enough hit of alcohol would provide the same amount of clarity, too.
It's possible. I don't know. I don't get drunk. Because it's hard to get drunk on grasshoppers. Shut up. Leave me alone.
Yeah, it's been too long for me, too. I know.
Very much so. But it's a huge annoyance because how do you argue with that? I mean, really, it's a personally held belief. So now the final question of it all, as we get done with it all. When is it acceptable? When can you say your religiously held, your deeply held belief, Reverend, for you, is acceptable justification? I'm trying to English tonight. I really am. Is acceptable justification for otherwise frowned upon social interactions? And I hope that I pronounced that all correctly and got the point across. At what point is your religion enough reason for you to act like a douche? See, I didn't do it this time. All right, I picked a different D word this time. does that sound like a fair enough rehash of the question that you're asking? We really shouldn't tackle.
Yeah, it's, you know, when do you have the right to refuse customer service? What are the conditions that are allowable versus conditions that are not allowable? And we do have anti-discriminatory laws set up to prevent certain things. Because this actually came up in conversation, let's say that I run a service whereby I drive a truck, and I drive up and down a highway every day, and when I see somebody on the side of the road with a flat tire, my service provides tire repair. Now, if I drive past that person and don't offer them service, am I being a dick? You know, well, possibly yes, possibly no. Is it a legitimate reason that I passed them up, or a non-legitimate reason? You know, if they're black or Jewish or Muslim or Christian, and I use it as an excuse, that's illegal. That's discrimination, and we have federal and state regulations based on that. Now, if I pass them up because they're driving a Volkswagen Bug and those specific tires that they use, I have no way to repair. You know, I'm not saying that this is the case. I'm using this as an analogy. Let's say they use a very special tire out of special materials for all Volkswagen Bugs, and I have no means to repair them. Well, then I'm not being a jerk. I have no legitimate way to offer them service other than maybe notify another company that can do that repair, you know, offer to call them a taxi or something. But even then, that's still not a responsibility on my part. That would just be being a decent human being. So if this doctor, you know, owned, it's a private company. It's not a public hospital. It is a private company. I will go back to the devil's advocate statement. You know, since there's no law where they are about sexual discrimination, was this doctor being legitimate reason for excusing them for not working on them? In a way, sad to say, yeah, because legally they were not discriminating. But also, to the truest definition of the word, was it legitimate? I don't think so. I think the doctor was being a dick.
Yeah, something before I get to everybody else on this one. Your analogy would be far better if it was you pulled over, got out of the car, pulled out a couple of new tires and rims, came over, took the lug nuts off, and then said, oh, by the way, I don't have your stuff. Sorry. But I'm sure somebody else will come along and help you now, and I'm going to leave now. Bye. That's kind of where I think the fulfillment of the analogy would be. But Beth, over in the Q&A, I'm pretty sure most of us would agree. Her statement is, I'm sorry, but any medical personnel that allows religious woo to override science in the treatment of a patient, I would not want anything to do with them. I would run very fast. Two problems. One, the patient could not run, let alone lift their own head at that point. And two, yeah.
That's a good point, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. I hate to whip out this phrase, but social justice.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that's going to be the only recourse here. Whereas word of this particular physician's move there, I didn't say it, basically her stance is that's not going to go to her reputation. And whether or not, you know, it could be now that parents of children who are not LGBT parents, you know, so-called straight couples, might look at this and go, you know, she really was a insert D word of the night here. I don't think we're going to be using her at all. Like, and to me, that's the best consequence of all this. If it is perfect, if it is 100% private practice, which I was actually going to ask the question, I don't know because, again, I'm north of the border. These private practices, if they are funded solely by what they charge patients, then okay. But if the hand of the government is at any way, shape, or form involved in their being able to sustain themselves as a building or as a practice, then I would think they would have to end up being subject to certain laws that perhaps do cause friction with so-called religious beliefs. But I don't know that for certain. But all I'm saying is the best justice of all is she's going to lose business.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I was going to kind of hit that really quickly. Short version is, generally speaking, if you accept a public insurance, i.e. Medicare, Medicaid, which is government-funded, typically at the state level / federal level, yeah, there's a whole, for us, 14th Amendment thing that says everybody's supposed to get treated equally, thank you, which unfortunately may or may not necessarily cover in this particular case because of, well, I could be completely overstepping on that one. Jeremiah, by the way.
Once again, it's a case of we don't have all the facts about the practice and the background of the physicians and the entire story. There are holes. So while we can say our opinions and everything else, there are just too many missing facts to come to a complete conclusion.
Well, yes, but yeah. and now that this has been dragged into the public, who knows?
Yes, and what we're dealing with is what we have from the news story itself. And please understand, we are going by what we have so far because we don't have every last piece of minutia. We simply can't, and we won't have a grander understanding of it all for, you know, probably a little bit longer until something gets dragged out into the public light all over again. But what we have now works as a good mental framework for hashing through if this is the case, if this actually is what has happened, how do we feel about it? How do we think about it? What does our perspective say about it? How should we deal with it? What would be the implications? All of those whys, and the whole point of this thing. By the way, Jeremiah, yeah, we know that unfortunately we do get some echoing every once in a while. Google Hangouts is not a perfect science by any stretch, but it's cheap and effective, and with a little bit of, you know, being careful of it all, you know, we pretty well got this. For the most part.
Part of it's my fault when I'm unmuted. Apparently my microphone is not the best in the world right now.
Well, a part of that has got to do with the way that the Hangouts technology operates. I mean, it all depends.
I can just add that...
Please.
Yeah. What disturbs me most in all this is that the fact that irrationality is permeating... trades where normally fact is essential. And not only is it permeating it, it's taking priority in, like in this case, the irrational side. So it's not only going to be for this trade, I'm worried that it's going to spread to other trades as well where fact is essential.
Yeah, I can well imagine. So we're getting pretty close to closing up shop for the evening. So I want to hit the last item over here and frame this into our closing bids for this all. Beth, who had also You know what? I'm pretty sure on the Q&A that you guys who are Beth, I want to make sure that it's okay for me to use this. Now that I've already gone ahead and said that it was from you, I want to make sure that it is okay for me to use it as part of the show, because once it's out there, there's no taking that back. There is no second guessing. There is no edit, because you know I know the answer is probably going to be yes, absolutely, go ahead and do it, but I just want to be sure about that one. While I'm waiting to find out from that one, a couple of other comments that came through. Jeremiah, who, wow, thanks. The Bible treats being gay as a, quote, sin. Would the doctor turn away the baby of a serial killer, of a rapist? Or is homophobia the bigoted flavor of the week for sins? That's something I'm actually going to, I'm going to hold that one, because I want to use that as part of my closing to tie it all together. And I didn't. Okay. Beth gave me the okay. Please forgive me for sounding like I'm being like overly careful about it. As I've said to other people on the show, you know, or who are going to be on the show. Once you're there, it's out there forever. Nothing ever dies on the internet permanently. It's kind of like the Marvel Universe, except for that one blonde-haired girl with neck break. Never mind. We'll come back to that. But Beth had said, I am gay. I face this every day of my life as I live in a state that has no protection. This is what I want to have you guys close us all up with. And Joey, I'm going to be starting with you and moving through the list. Imagine that at this point, there are no protections for whatever classification you want it to be, whatever minority classification it might be, whether it be Jews or atheists or LGBT or Mexican or whatever other demographic you want to add. Where is it okay to just take these people and just say, no, you're not worth it at the last second and say that they're subhuman?
Where is it okay? Pretty much everywhere. When is it okay? About 100 years ago.
It was still not okay.
Societal norms being what they were.
Yeah, well, I mean, let's face it. It wasn't 100% wrong. It was only 3/5 wrong, right?
Oh, zing. Good catch there, sir. But, yep. No, it doesn't matter whether there's a law against it or not. Look, I have been in, I hate to be tooting the military experience horn here again.
Dude, hold it. Before you say, hold on. Why do I have you here? You have that perspective. You and I are both grew up in the Roman Catholic stuff, so we have that shared, so to speak. But you have the military experience. You have that perspective. That's why you're here. Goddamned use it.
But this isn't necessarily a military thing, rather than the fact that I have seen parts of the world where things are very different from what we're used to here in what we call the Western world.
Asked and answered, Your Honor. Get on with it.
Places where there pretty much are no laws in effect. I have seen just how terrible that kind of condition can be. But you know what? Even in that kind of condition, I have seen how absolutely wonderful people can be. Doesn't matter what their background is. Doesn't matter what their religion is, their preferences are. I have seen a man give a dying man water. A man who was pretty much sentenced to death by his own people because he had broken one of the tenets of their religion. And this man, who was a very devout member of that religion, out there in the open for everybody to see, is sitting there giving him water. If people over... we're supposed to be the developing world, and they're kind of showing us up. Come on, people.
Joseph?
Yes.
How about for you, then? When is it acceptable to just take one of these minorities, no matter what it is, and just say, nope, not worth my time?
It's not, ever. Somebody who's actively trying to kill you, maybe. That's it.
Something to be said for that. Tech, I'm gonna have you pull up last on this one because it was yours, and I want you to have the last on that one. Dallin, how about for you? When is it fine?
It's never fine. And I don't care what time period you're talking about. We are talking about being human to humanity. No, that's what this is all about. There, it doesn't matter who you are, what you are, who you sleep with at night, what you sleep with at night for that matter. The fact is, we're all human beings. And to say that I'm not going to treat you because your parents are this way, but don't worry, I'll point you to another doctor or I'll point you to another person who can help, because I myself cannot. You have just invalidated your entire education, your entire practice, and quite frankly, you do not deserve the title of physician, healer, doctor, police officer, firefighter, anything. If you feel the need that you have to discriminate on a particular group because of your religious or other certain philosophical beliefs, get your ass to McDonald's and start flipping burgers, because that is all you are good for. I'm done.
Fair enough. Chris, you get an opportunity now. I don't hurt you with that microphone.
No, thanks for leaving me to the last there, because it's going to be tough to think of anything new to put on this. But as everyone else has said, no, it's never okay. And yeah, it was done in societies in the past, and it was a social norm in the past. That is, for me, argumentum ad populum. Just because everyone else is doing something does not make it right. Just because the whole society was doing it 200, 300 years ago or is doing it somewhere else in the world does not make it right. And this treatment of different groups as being less than human or not proper people because they don't smoke the same kind of cigarettes as us or whatever else ridiculous distinction you make has only served to separate people and to draw up barriers between people. And a lot of people have got hurt or killed over it over the centuries. And so it's never acceptable. It never was acceptable or a good thing. And I hope that we can leave all that bullshit behind us someday fairly soon in the future.
And these divisions are artificial. And they are the result of a few dictates. And I mean, just these artificial divisions, it's just evil. I mean, we should be just humans.
Yeah. Tech, I said I was going to let you have pretty much the last word on this one, since it was your baby.
Well, everybody here hit on really good points I was going to make about being, for example, a humanist and treating other humans with respect. You know, when do we say that the respect for their belief in the religion is okay, so long as it doesn't inflict upon others? Well, considering using logic, that's all the respect their belief should ever have. Because when your belief starts mandating that you inflict harm upon others, when it says that you can choose to ignore others because, you know, religion says so, you stop being a decent human being. You stop treating other people the way you want to be treated. It doesn't matter if you're flipping burgers at a McDonald's. It doesn't matter if you're a doctor. It doesn't matter if you're a truck driver. When you start to discriminate, you're not being a nice person anymore. You're not using the golden rule. You forgot what it means to treat another person with respect, regardless of your excuse. And that's all this doctor did, was use an excuse that they can legally get away with to not treat somebody because their belief told them, it's wrong. Stop being a dick, people. You know, start showing respect for other people. Yes, I understand that people have different beliefs and everything else, but when it comes down to something like medicine isn't a belief system. In some countries it might be, but true medicine is logic and science and math and results and statistics, not whose imaginary sky daddy blessed the medicine or which volcano you threw a virgin into. If you ever question this concept, think about this little fact for a moment. Every excuse has been used to date to try to prevent members of the LGBTQ+ community from receiving the same kind of treatment as a heterosexual white male, just as an example, have been used in the past to discriminate against African Americans, blacks, Negroes, whatever the term you are most comfortable using or recognizing. It's been all been used before, and we saw how well that worked out.
And before that, it was the Italians, or the Irish, or the Chinks, or the Japs, or name whichever group that came over to America that stayed in waves of immigration.
Hell, it goes all the way back to the Native Americans. Let's face it.
It's true. Okay. Well, it certainly goes back a hell of a lot longer than sort of colonialization of America, because throughout history, the Jews have got a pretty rough deal from just about everyone. Mm-hmm. Certainly in Europe, going back centuries, Africans have had a very bad deal in Europe.
Christians had it bad when they first began, too. I mean, there's no group that hasn't been stigmatized that I can think of.
There's been just about every group. So, I mean, it was like Catholic versus Protestant and God knows what other groups going back since it was tribe A versus tribe B.
It's clan mentality. I mean, it's going back to clans, and I mean, it's just the same thing all through history.
And
it's
that's
the status quo against the outsiders or anybody not us.
Yep, and that's where I want to stop it all off at, because that dovetails exactly where I wanted to end up with. Jeremiah had said before, and again, repeating it, the Bible treats being gay as a sin. Would the doctor turn away the baby of a serial killer, a rapist, or is homophobia the bigoted flavor of the week for sins? We've said it on several occasions in several different ways here. It's a doctor who has turned away a patient for something that the patient had nothing to do with. It had nothing to do with. And I'm saying it because it doesn't matter which particulars at this point. A doctor is one of those people that is trusted greatly with the health, well-being, and welfare of someone, whether for ourselves or someone that we have been entrusted the care and well-being of someone. So for someone with that kind of trust, that position, to just go ahead and say, I don't want you, because of something that you had nothing to do with, that's religion in a nutshell, or minimally the Abrahamic version, where man is screwed up and is wrong to begin with, even before, as Matt Dillahunty has put it, even before the first breath.
And that's not strictly, say, not solely Abrahamic. In India, with the caste systems out there, you'd easily get equivalent situations where it's not because of the parents' sexuality, but because they're of the wrong caste or whatever else. Okay. So Abrahamic religions can't take all of the dubious credit for this.
Well, fair enough. But my point being is that it's, we have much more exposure with it. So for that one, at least, I can go with, because Genesis. But I've already tackled that one before. You can check out one of the previous five-minute freestyles for that.
And as a reminder to our viewers and listeners, is that we're not doctors ourselves. You know, we're laymen. Okay, we're ordinary people. Some of us have different skill sets than the other. Some have different backgrounds than the other. But at the end of the day, we're not we're not politicians. We're not lawyers. We're the people that you live next door to. We're the people down the street. You know, that kind of thing.
Yes. Yes. And to finish my piece on this, it's already been said. If it were a police officer, it'd be dereliction of duty. If it was a firefighter, also. If it was a military person, it would still be the same. These are positions of high public trust. Now, the fact that this was someone who was in a private practice, most likely, and again, most likely, so there's a little bit of wiggle room here. Does that make it any better? That's really where the question comes down. How do we determine if it's worth? Now, I made a, forgive me for using the term, off-color joke earlier about it was only 3/5 acceptable at one point, or unacceptable as the case may be. And for those that don't understand the reference, in the Constitution for the United States, the country of which I am somewhat proud to be part of, it was enshrined, so to speak, that people who were African American were only worth 3/5 of a Caucasian person, male. We came out of that and we grew. And that wasn't necessarily a religious thing, but it was a mark on us as a people, as a society. Religion hasn't evolved past the idea that an innocent life is just that. It doesn't have a blemish on its record, and it shouldn't. That's called being fair. Until you have done something, you can't be held accountable for something, regardless of what your magic book says. Because by that token, I shot JFK. And if you go by that too, I was Spartacus. I was Brutus. I was Flavius Caesar. I took on all of those bad and all of those good all at the same time, even though I didn't exist until March of 1969. So when is it okay for somebody to do this? When is it okay for someone to say, you're not good enough? If you need one of us to explain to you why that question is abhorrent in the extreme, it doesn't matter if we tell you what the answer is. You're just not going to get it. As always, thank you very much for spending the time with us. We know full well that this is not exactly the sexiest of shows, but we do still believe that all of our perspectives, layman that they might be, is worthwhile. As always, I would like to thank the panel for having joined us this evening. Joseph, thank you very kindly, and of course, good morning. You have yourself a hopefully warmer day than we're having over here. If ever he gets back to his microphone. God, you know, we're going to be one of those. Fine, that's the way it's going to be. You know what? Screw it. We'll get back to you again eventually. Chris, good morning. Thank you very much for your time again. And I hope that you're planning on having a very nice brekkie.
I am indeed. It's now 7 in the morning over here, so it's time to start my Sunday.
Sure enough. Anything that you'd like to put out a plug for?
Not this week.
Fair enough. And now that you're back, Joseph, thank you. Good morning. And I hope that you have yourself a warmer day than we're having here.
Yeah. I think it's 4 degrees here. So.
Lovely. Lucky you. Anything that you'd like to plug for us? I know the answer is probably no, but I'm going to ask it anyway.
No.
Damn it. It's minus 10 right now for me over here. Great.
Well, hang in there.
I'm trying. Unrenown Tech, thank you very kindly for your time and wonderful topic. Thank you so much.
Yeah, it was something that hit home being a father myself. How would I like it if somebody said to me, listen, you know, because you're a single father, we don't approve of your lifestyle, so your son can't receive treatment here. How would that affect me? I mean, just, you know, you hear about people going off the deep end. I would definitely lose it. My first instinct would be go to the press, not for single fathers everywhere, but to bring light to the situation that people who have these opinions are allowed to use them to discriminate, you know, and who else is it going to affect? Because it's going to be beyond just me. I don't see this as a gay agenda problem. I see this as as a humanity problem. And that's why it hits so close to home for me.
Perfectly understandable, and thank you. Joey, again, thank you very much. Try to stay warm and safe. Jeez.
I'm trying. It's always a pleasure, at least when I'm not hacking up a lung. And just to show that those of us here on the show are far from perfect. Yes, I know, it's a horrible habit for horrible people. And if that's not enough, allow this to serve as a reminder to you kids. Do not smoke.
Fair enough. And before we get past you, I'm going to bounce back to Tech in a second. Anything that you would like to plug before we get out of here?
Oh, me?
Well, yes.
Oh, shit, I don't have anything I do myself. I'd like to plug Holy Crap, the Vlogcast. Actually, you know, there is something I'd like to bring up. No Illusions, one of the hosts of the Scathing Atheist, actually took the time to comment on my timeline and point out certain facts of discriminatory behavior. And while I know that I'm just an average person, he doesn't really know me all that well. We only had a chance to talk once on Holy Crap here. I think it was like episode 9 or something like that. And I didn't come across as coming when he and I spoke and I had made a statement and he like jumped down my throat. I don't always say things exactly the way I had intended to say them. It's one of my failings in life. I don't always get my point across. So when he jumped onto my timeline and he made the comments that he did, it was very supportive of the point that I was trying to bring across, and I greatly appreciate that. So for those of you out there, if you get a chance to, I highly suggest listening to the podcast called The Scathing Atheist. It is not safe for work. It is definitely not safe for children under the age of 13, in my opinion, depending on what your kind of language your children are used to hearing. But once you get around that aspect of it, and his co-hosts, Heathen Enright and Lucinda Illusions, they make really good points.
Yep. And to clarify, by the way, I've just pulled it up. That was episode 6, for those that go looking for it. And thank you. And by the way, Tech, Noah had I was going through my old emails, and Noah had specifically made sure that I let you know that he didn't want you to think that he was being mean or anything to you. He just kind of thought about it afterwards.
He was being very adamant about his viewpoint, and I when I went back and rewatched the episode, I realized how I came across and where the mistake I was in the words that I was using. I had verbalized an internal thought incorrectly, and that's what the problem was. It wasn't his fault. You know, his reaction was perfectly legitimate based upon the words coming out of my mouth. I make a lot of mistakes when I talk, and I don't always say the things that I mean, and it's something that I work on.
This is what's cool about this. We learn from our mistakes. Joey, giving you the opportunity before we get out of here, did you want to plug anything other than Ken Ham?
Amish Wolverine.
I think he was, God damn it, great. He's going looking for the silver-backed Yeti somewhere. I don't even know. Don't even give me that. Because
Joey, unless those are silver bullets, they won't work.
Not to mention, I'm looking at him and I'm thinking, Neem Dispenser here. Sorry. Dallin, thank you very kindly. And, of course, as always, stay warm. And what are you plugging this week? Because I will make you.
It was a pleasure, as always. One quick thing before I do my plug, I just wanted to let you guys know I got not an acceptance, but an acknowledgement letter. I posted this earlier on Facebook and I think on Twitter too. As of last Tuesday, I officially submitted my first short story to an anthology. I got the official response back. It's been accepted. It is now in the hands. What was I talking about earlier about things completely 100% beyond my control? The fate of this story is now in the hands of several editors, critics, etc. It's only been a few days, but the book that it's slated for will most likely be published in September of this year. So, yeah, yours truly could eventually become or attain the title of published author. So, for what it's worth, I've got everything crossed except my eyes at this point because I still need to watch you guys.
Dallin, this is great because I'm officially a published critic.
Uh-oh.
Wait a minute. You mean to tell me that we have had on this show thus far two published writers, a critic, and a designer?
And a card-carrying member of the NRA, Joe?
Well, yes, but that doesn't apply to this particular bunch here. We need to incorporate.
Oh boy. as Bill Nye would probably say, we could change the world.
Yes, we could. And
or at least make it a much scarier place.
With any luck, of course, with our voices and eventually with yours too, we can do exactly that. Thank you very much. Yes, thank you all very much for your time. If you are looking to find out a little bit more information about us, we are slowly, very slowly and steadily trying to build up the website. And yes, the website is actually out there. You can look at it. There's very little that you can do with it at the moment, but I'm working it over a little at a time. I'm still getting a lot of help. But you can check it out over at holycrapthevlogcast.com. Yes, it's a little bit long, but you know what? It was easier than trying to hunt down a .tv instead, so screw it all. I'm working on it. It's as Dallin will tell you, I went ahead and got myself way over my head looking at stuff and trying to figure out what, how much of this stuff am I supposed to, I'm supposed to code? No.
Yeah.
So I'm sitting back and just.
Well, you see, you forgot to ask yourself the most fundamental question, and that is, how do you eat an elephant? And what you did, you decided to eat the elephant all in one gulp, a la Pac-Man, or a la Kirby, as the case may be, instead of breaking it down, asking yourself what you need to get started, you know, build it slowly, then put the bells and whistles on.
Yes, I know, and I've learned my lesson, and I'm being very careful about it, and I'm making sure that I don't try to ask Jaws from the James Bond movies because, well, he's dead.
Yeah. I take a little bit of blame because as soon as I heard that you were putting this up and what format you were planning to use, which was WordPress, cue the tomatoes right about now, I did start throwing a lot of plugin ideas at you because of what worked for me. At least I didn't change the font. But at least I didn't throw the voicemail add-on at you. We'll get to that.
Comic Sans.
Already WordPress makes me cringe.
No Comic Sans.
No.
You know what? Hold it.
All right. If I'm not allowed to be Comic Sans, how about Impact?
You know what? Hold it. Because if anybody's going to start throwing a whole bunch of stuff at me, I swear to Christ, I will turn this whole goddamn web page around and I will replace every single last character with the little typefaces that look like they came out of one of those little clicky pressy machines with the peel off labels that you stick on
Comic Sans. Comic Sans.
Comic Sans. Oh, that's it. You're banned. You're done. I'm sorry.
We're gonna make you Apple Chancery.
Great. Look, if you guys don't behave, I will go trolling archive.org for as many web pages that were done on Angel Fire as possible and recode everything using Blink as much as possible.
Why not use GeoCities?
Because GeoCities had class.
They also had that blinky web banner and text
code. Let it go. We got to get out of here. Folks, thank you very much for your time. We got to get out of here. And right about now is about where the background music should intro right about now. Dallin, here's your spot. There you go. And we will catch you guys next week for the show. I have no idea what the title is going to be, but if you want to go ahead and leave us some information, please, by all means, go over to the website. We've got the contact information over there in the section that says contact us, and we will talk with you again soon. As always, for my lady, Matane Fujin, I love you, I miss you, dream of me. And of course, as always, for all of you, I wish you all the peace I no longer have. I wish you the strength that I've learned. I wish you well. Until the next time we get together, everyone, as always, good night.
You've been listening to Holy Crap, the Vlogcast. Feel free to leave a comment on the show's website at holycrapthevlogcast.com, where you'll also find links to our Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and Google Plus pages. Theme music provided by Kevin MacLeod at incompetech.com. On behalf of all of us here, thank you for listening.